another episode of the William Branham Historical Research Podcast. I'm your host, John Collins, the author and founder of William Branham Historical Research at william-branham.org. And with me, I have my co-host and friend, Brantley Smith, former member of IHOP KC. Brantley, it's good to be back and to talk about the Kansas City Star. And no, not that Kansas City Star, this other one. You sent me that this morning. I'm looking at it. I thought, oh boy, a Kansas City Star article. Oh, wait, that's not what I'm looking for right here.
Isn't it great?
it's unbelievable. But you know, in my weird history that I have coming out of this type of movement, whenever people see something that is just so critically wrong with the central figure, they will do anything to try to reconcile that. And I don't even fault the people who do it, because I was like this, right? You're in this mind control, you're in this cognitive dissonance where it's wrong, I know it's wrong, but yet at the same time, it's right, I know it's right. And your brain is going like, which way do we go? Which way do we go? And that's what I read when I read this newspaper.
The most fascinating thing to me is that we don't. So we're going to be talking today about a ebook, is what they're calling it, that was released. It's 138 pages from the Father's Heart Church that you've probably heard me mention before, who have been participating in the replatforming efforts of Mike Bickle. And the most impressive thing that I found, John, is I can't find any record that James Crawford has ever met Mike Bickle, that he's ever like even interacted with the guy. That doesn't mean that he hasn't, but the only links that I can find between him and Mike are his sister coming in August of 2025, and that's kind of when they first popped on our radar. They had a whole thing of why I trust Mike Bickle, and was like trying to defend Mike and trying to smear victims and even some of the former leaders. They were bringing up old prophetic words, and we'll see some of that in this document too if we get to it. But the only connection he really has is like he had like a prophetic word in 2002 or something like that, and he started a house of prayer, he says, and then he finds Mike Bickle and he had a house of prayer, and so they're like divinely connected now. And that's like the only like crossover that I'm able to find. But before we jump into it, I would like to ask you something. So I was diving into this and using a little bit of AI to help me research and go through the process. And there was a phrase brought up because it was pulling stuff from your website and such as I was looking at it, talking about the vindicated prophet. Yeah. That was not a phrase that I'd heard before. And so, but whenever I looked it up, it's something you've talked about a whole lot. And we talked last time we sat down together, we were talking about this fast and feast that we were doing, the counter feast, and that it's ending on May 7th. And I didn't know that May 7th was an important date to William Branham, and that also May 7th was whenever IHOP started their 21-day fast back in 83. It wasn't IHOP then, but it was Mike's church. And that was kind of like their little commissioning date. So this fast, today's May 6th that we're recording this. Tomorrow will be May 7th, the end of the fast that they're doing. So I can't help but wonder if there's going to be a big like red curtain drop tomorrow and we see Mike somewhere, something like that. But tell me about this vindicated prophet May 7th and stuff.
It's funny to me how many people try to connect themselves and just shove themselves into these ministries by connecting themselves. I can't go too far with this right now, but I was looking, as you know, into Vance Belter, the Minnesota shooter who shot the political fish. I was digging into their church records, and they were doing kind of the same thing. They were mentioning Mike Bickle. They were mentioning their connection to him. I couldn't find where they ever actually met, but yet his name is all through the transcripts, as is YWAM, some other stuff in their church literature. So people are trying to wedge themselves into this ministry, and it comes back to exactly what you're talking about. Branham started this whole thing. He claimed that it was spiritual. He would throw out these dates, May the 6th, May the 7th. He never really knew what date it was because he's pulling all of it out of his butt. But he says May, it was more frequently May 6th, not May 7th. So that would be today, May 6th. He said, May the 6th, 1947, the very day that Israel became a nation, I was commissioned by this angel of God.
That sounds familiar.
Well, you go look it up, and that's not really when Israel became a nation. He got the whole thing kind of wrong. So it was all tied to this, but what he did was ingenious. I will give him credit for this. It was ingenious, and it saved his butt a lot of times. What he did was he started this doctrine of a vindicated prophet of God. And we heard that phrase, I kid you not, every single sermon for 37 years of my life. I heard that inside of a sermon every single day. Every Sunday we're there. What he did was this. A prophet is a prophet of God, vindicated by signs following, a vindicated prophet of God. So what he's trying to say is, I can give you a prophecy. If I can heal you, I'm a vindicated prophet of God. I have signs following. And he disconnects fully the aspect of the prophecy itself. So if the prophecy is complete and utter nonsense and fails altogether, it doesn't matter. I'm a vindicated prophet of God. And whenever I started doing my research, my mind hadn't made that connection because logically that doesn't work. If you're a prophecy, you evaluate the prophets. If you have a prophecy, you evaluate that by, did it come to pass? Did it not? I'm in that mindset, even though I'm programmed not to be. And then people were hitting me with, well, it doesn't matter if the prophecy failed. He was a vindicated prophet of God. And I'm like, no, you can't do this, man. You can't say he's vindicated by this other thing. That would be like saying, I'm a baseball player, and I'm vindicated by whether or not I can swing a hammer. No, man, if you can hit the ball, maybe, but you can't do this. And that's what he did to the movement. So this is widespread throughout Branhamism, but that got into the Latter Rain movement, the healing revivals. And I hear it all the time from people you'd never even connect to Branhamism, and you know exactly where they got it from.
It's amazing. The hoops that are jumped through and the stories that are told and the story that they're telling here is that the article that was released on April 20th, talking about the fast that we talked about last time in the Kansas City Star, was a divine confirmation of sorts. And they propose these four different signs that happen, and three of them are directly tied to the release of that article. What is great about all of this is he claims there's no way he could have known that this article was going to be published and that he had no idea that the major publication in Kansas City was called the Kansas City Star. But guess what? You can't make this stuff up. The Why I Trust Mike Bickle video that I mentioned earlier from August of 2025. I thought I was going crazy for a moment. So last night I was like, man, I'm going to go check this video and look through the transcript. And sure enough, John, in August of 2025, there's a video on his own YouTube channel of James Crawford reading a direct excerpt from the Kansas City Star about Mike Bickle. So there's no way he could have known that Kansas City Star was the name of the newspaper. And there's no way he knew could know that the article was coming out because he had no idea that there was a fast going on that would garner attention. You've already talked about the Kansas City Star. So that's their first big sign and confirmation is that on April 14th, he has a prophetic word or a dream. I'm trying to remember exactly what it was that he saw that Mike Bickle, God told him that Mike Bickle is my Kansas City Star and only those with eyes to see can see it. So we immediately see that positioning of anybody who says anything different, who doesn't see this is not hearing from God. And that's one of the things that we'll like track like through this whole thing is there is this mechanism that's used that he over and over repeats, these are not my words. These are not James Crawford's words. These are God's words. And so like it just makes you just cringe all over. And I'm sure that you have much history with people claiming divine, appealing to divine authority.
Well, that's just it. Like I said, your brain tries to reconcile the thing that isn't true. And I'm not, in no way am I making fun of this guy because my mind was wired like this. I know exactly how it works. I feel really, really sorry for him. But back to the baseball example, if you're a baseball player and you can't throw a baseball, but you say, I'm vindicated, but I can swing a hammer. Well, people who are sitting in the crowd, when they see you, the logical person can say, no, man, get this guy out. He can't play baseball. If you're brainwashed, you say, well, he swings a hammer. He told me he can swing a hammer. But what he's doing with this Kansas City Star sideline. It has nothing to do with either the hammer or the baseball. It's like saying, well, this guy next to me, he said that he knew another guy who named his dog Baseball. It's like no relevance whatsoever. But I did the same thing. What you do is, what is called this, I had a spiritual revelation, my brother. And what it is essentially is, if you can find any single coincidence, you relate that to the thing. I had this, we were in this one really, really terrible situation one time, and I saw a flock of doves fly off, and in my brain, I'm wired in that Pentecostal mindset, oh my gosh, that was a flock of doves, and the dove, that's the bird that came to Noah, and my mind went through all these leaps and hoops to try to make something supernatural and spiritual that wasn't, because that's how we were trained to do in the movement. The problem is, like I said, it's really a distraction from the evidence of whether this is a true prophet of God or not. You can't claim that this side story vindicates the prophet whose prophecies aren't true. I mean, we've kind of run the prophecies into the ground. There's not really much that's left to even evaluate. It's so wrong. And the Bible says you evaluate the prophet by the prophecies. Did they happen or did they not?
Yeah, and I will say the email that was sent out to the friends of Mike Bickle was sent on April 16th, and he claims this was April 14th that this happened. So, I mean, there could be a world that he didn't know that the fast was happening. I'll give him the benefit of the doubt on that. But on April 19th, the day before, he gets another prophecy where he says that your good works will be in the news. And then, so that's another thing of where he uses that as a confirmation. So it's the not knowing about the fast. It's that Mike Bickle is the Kansas City Star, which he unpacks. This 138 page document is, and I don't think it's AI either. Like, there's some of the headings and stuff that make me think that, like, okay, maybe this is a little AI slop, but he has his detailed explanations that he goes into time and time again, and what it means that Mike Bickle is the Kansas City Star, going even as far as comparing him to Jesus Christ himself and says that Jesus is the bright and morning star. And so there's this leveling of, which I never would have paid attention to, John, if it wasn't for you talking about the deity cult and different things like that, of putting Mike Bickle on the same level as Jesus. And as I was going through this document, when I went through it the first time, I went through all 138 pages, kind of skim read it and highlighted a bunch of stuff that stuck out to me, specifically things that were trying to control narratives or flip narratives or cause people to feel certain ways, all these coercive control techniques, because there's a lot of, this is God's word, and if you say anything different, you're not of God. Or if you bring an accusation, then you are under demonic influence. There's so much of that type language that causes a us versus them thing, which they thrive off of. And that's been one of the most interesting things to observe that I would love to get your thoughts on, because I'm sure you've witnessed a lot of these splinter groups forming, I guess, over the years, or have seen it historically, how these splinter groups form. But we've seen Hope City, we've seen what exists of IHOP KC right now. We see what is now, we know, the Grandview Fellowship, which is the little church that's Clay Edwards is running out of his garage, that Diane Bickle is preaching at. We're seeing all these little things, and you got Father's Heart Church coming up, another little splinter group. But it's interesting because they're all kind of taking their own paths, and it's interesting to watch in real time, because IHOP, after the fast was announced, sent out an email claiming they have nothing to do with the fast and that they don't think that Mike Bickle can ever come back to ministry. At the same time, and this is all speculation, at the same time, I saw as like there was a longtime worship leader that has been a staunch supporter of Mike, who stepped out of IHOP KC. I'm not sure where they're going, but it makes me wonder. And I hear rumors about them selling property and buying property, moving location and rebranding. Did this kind of stuff happen? Like, I guess, like, after Branham died, I'm guessing it was a huge power grab. But, like, did you ever witness these splinter groups happening and, like, the doubling down on certain things? Did you witness a lot of that?
Oh, absolutely. In fact, whenever I read this article that you sent me, this PDF that you sent me, that's exactly where my head went, because I remember not just going through that one or two times, but what would happen is you would be faced with a critical thought that is undeniable. In other words, there is absolutely no way that this guy's a baseball player. Kick him out. That thought goes through your head. Even if you're brainwashed, that thought goes in your head. But what happens is you start to feel more righteous indignation in the fact that you're wrong. In fact, we would say things like, there's no evidence that can tell us that that's wrong. I don't care what the evidence says. The evidence is the devil trying to trick us. You go through all those mental gymnastics. And the sad truth of it is, the evidence is the evidence. There are facts that just simply speak for themselves. Get back to the baseball example, and I know I'm running this into the ground, but it's really that simple. If the guy can't throw a ball and can't even make it to home plate, and he keeps doing it over and over and over again,
he's not a pitcher.
You're going to eject him. He's not a pitcher. Or if he can't swing and hit a ball, you're going to kick him out. But we've got into this mindset where prophets are different. They can prophesy. It doesn't matter if every single one of them fails or if 9 out of 10 fail. As long as we can find some coincidence that happened because he said it, and that's the key, because he said it, we link those coincidences to his statements. So you're driving down the road, you see a guy that is throwing a baseball and catching it on the side of the road. Oh, that's vindication. My prophet throws a baseball too. I mean, that's really how all this works. So your brain gets so disconnected from reality, you start to, I hate to say it, but it's a mild form of psychosis. You go into psychosis, you start linking things that aren't linked, you start seeing things that aren't there, you start, a flock of birds flies up and you think, oh my gosh, God is with us.
Yeah. I have some of the threads here that I want to pull on, as far as I mentioned that he had no idea what the newspaper was, and that one of the things that he said on page 20 of it is that the reporting on Mike's allegations is actually transmitting darkness, is what they're doing by doing that. That it's opposite of the light of Mike and the other stars that are shining. And there's this constant, I guess, catch-all that's thrown onto the back, which we see with prophetic words all the time, right? Like these big, broad, sweeping little qualifiers that get tagged on the end. And so you talk about it talks about Mike Bickle very often, and then other falsely accused ministers is the phrase that's used, which, you know, I'm like, it makes my head spin. Like, I just can't wrap my head around how people make heads or tails of it, even though I was in it. And the other thing that he brings in with being the Kansas City Star, talked about that leveling with the divine almost, that he says this phrase, he says, even if he did, like everything that they said that he did, this is a loose quote. He said, even if he did everything they said that he did, he's still the Kansas City Star. Like that's who he is. And like, his sin does not define him, you know, that kind of message that feels good. And we talk about that, I think, frequently, of like those half-truths that you're like, okay, yeah, they're kind of right, but also totally missing the mark. Like just taking enough truth and twisting it just enough to where we can apply it for the moment, if that makes sense.
Yeah. There's another thing that's going on here, and it's a little bit sketchy. I'm not going to say that that's what the guy is doing because I don't know, but I will say that Branham and others did this, and that's name-dropping. In Branham, in the research into Branhamism, I was finding these names that were just, no way, man. There's no way that he healed this person. One of the people was Florence Nightingale. We grew up believing that he healed and saved the life of Florence Nightingale, the Red Cross lady, right? And you go back into the recordings and you find in the very earliest version, what's that girl's name? Oh, her name was Florence. I called her Florence Nightingale. I mean, something like this. He's spinning up the names. And what it ends up with is there's no connection whatsoever to it. In fact, Voice of Healing had to actually publish an apology because he was name-dropping Florence Nightingale. But we believed it, and it gave credibility to the claim, regardless of whether we could prove the claim to be true or not. It was true because of the name, simply because of the name. Nobody's ever seen this person. Nobody knew did he actually heal her. They actually came up with some picture that looked like a Holocaust photo where somebody was insanely skinny and said, this is her, this is Florence Nightingale. And still, nobody really knows who this person was. healed King George. That's a name that you can easily drop. I healed King George. And you find out King George died not long after he claimed this. So he's dropping these names, and nobody checks to see are the claims true because the name is so significant. This guy's using the Kansas City Star. This is the Kansas City Star that's publishing all of the stuff about Mike Bickle. Mentally, whether you're intending to do that or not, the people who see it, they make that mental connection because their brains have been wired to be scrambled, if that makes any sense. So the brain goes down one pathway while the evidence is going down a different pathway.
The other way that I've seen that name dropping happen is that he's casting a wide net of... There's a handful of times I tried to highlight it every time I came across it, just to like kind of track it, where he talks about that the brethren have come against IHOP and Mike Bickle. And then he goes on and hits all the different ministries we've talked about for the past couple of years. He hits Morningstar and Rick Joyner, Daystar and all of those leaders, Sean Foyt, Bethel and Bill Johnson. And he says, and notice that all these that are being targeted are fivefold apostolic leaders. And I'm like, okay, like, and that means, you know, what? But he pulls out a quote from T.D. Jakes, of all people, because T.D. Jakes, I don't know if people remember, was loosely referenced with the Diddy stuff that happened. And so I guess T.D. Jakes had to make a public statement about it. I didn't follow that closely. I don't know what's true, what's not, all that kind of thing. But he took a quote from one of T.D. Jakes' sermons. I guess it was on a Christmas Eve service. I remember them saying that he said the worst that could happen if everything was true, talking about his own allegations, all I got to do is repent sincerely from my heart. There's enough power in the blood to cover all kinds of sin. I don't care what it is. The blood would fix it. But I ain't got to repent about this. And I'm like, they all ascribe to the same ideas. And there's this double standard, is what I'll call it, that I see time and time again through this document and in other places that T.D. Jakes pulls up here. I ain't got to repent. But whenever they start talking about people who are coming against them and accusing them and being restored to fellowship and being accepted back in, there is a clear repentance process for them and the things that they need to do that goes even as far as they imply that maybe some of them need to block certain voices on social media to keep them from the deception. And so I think it's hilarious that they think that Mike Bickle does not need to repent for his alleged decades of sexual abuse. But me and you, John, like, if we want to get back in the fold, like, we have to get down on our hands and knees and do some penance. And there's a whole process for us to be accepted back into the family. Like, I don't get it. I don't get it.
You know, that's something that not many people think through. So a Christian church has one job, really one job, is to save the lost. And you go out onto the streets, do you know the gospel, bring them into the church, show them love, show them kindness. That's what a church is for. But because of the way that this is structured with a central figure that cannot be wrong and is above all accountability, you have to demonize all of the critics. And so the critics are instantly lost. And in some cases, I know, I've listened to sermons where they've said hell is going to be a little hotter for those guys. In other words, they're not just fully lost, but they're worse lost than just your average sinner. They're the worst kind of sinner. They demonize the people who are calling out the issues. Back to the baseball game that I'm running into the ground. There's a guy on the stand that says, this guy throws the ball straight down on the ground and hasn't yet made it across the plate one single time. Can't we take him out or we're going to lose the game? It'd be like the whole crowd's just jumping on this guy and saying, no, man, you get out of this crowd. We're in an audience and we think that is our vindicated pitcher. That's really how this works. And because they're spiritually demonizing anybody who shows the critical information, what they're actually doing is they're saying, we are going to turn a blind eye to any evidence. It really doesn't matter what you show me. I'm just going to believe it anyway because God made some coincidence happen, and that coincidence is spiritual, and so I'm a vindicated listener of a vindicated prophet of God. The problem is, as you continue in that logic, you can really make it say anything you want Mike Bickle can say anything he wants. It doesn't matter what he says. It's just the fact that he is a leader, and the movement recognizes him as the central figure.
They do such a clever job. I say clever. I use that term loosely, of framing their arguments, and they do it in ways that you have to follow their logic. The way that they do that with the May 1st, the May 7th fast is that they frame it in a way that it's God ordained, and anybody that comes against it is coming against God, referring to our global nope feast that we had great participation in, by the way, which is still ongoing. And thank you to everyone who came over and participated in that. We had dozens of posts, John, of people sharing food, waking up, sharing the breakfast every morning. And some people, it was fast food binge fest, and it was great. But back to this, he says it in a way that it's God's fast, and then anybody who comes against it's coming against God. He talks about the accusers, and he does this Greg Locke thing, is what I refer to it as, is that there's witches involved. So there's a witch in our church. And he says that the witches are moving the needle, is what's going on right now. The witches are moving the needle. It's an attack against Mike Bickle. He even says that the accusers are demonically anointed. But he also says, he goes, but this isn't the enemy's plan. This is all God's initiation. God is the one who started all of this. And I know we're bouncing all over the place, but earlier you mentioned Branham with the founding of Israel. And that's kind of the same argument they make with Mike, is that Mike started this fast for Israel in 2023, and the war with Israel started in October of 2023, and Mike was ousted in October of 2023. So they make these connections and build these narratives and stories, to where I get where people don't want to rethink these things because they have to give up so much. And so you keep reinforcing that narrative so you don't have to change the narrative. Because it does take a lot of effort and a lot of hard work to like reform those belief systems and stuff. And when somebody shows something is false, that's a crazy dissonance to have to deal with. But he refers to these primary accusers, and he names Mike Winger. He names Julie Royce, which we know they love Julie Royce. They've had plenty of very edifying words about Julie Royce, is what we'll say. And Ron Cantor, who recently released a book about praying on people in the churches. But he says that they are demonically anointed by real witches. Those three are as the primary accusers, which I thought was great. And talked about them having this. This is a new one for me. He talked about that they had the spirit of Obama. I did not see that one coming. But the way that they framed out the accusers, I was trying to find this quote specific. I think I can pull it up here quick, that because it ties into Branhamism stuff that I don't know a lot about, but I've heard y'all talk a lot about, which was an allusion to the serpent seed. And he says, John, this is on page 42 of the document. He says, John the Baptist does not merely wash away sin. He exposes the lineage of those who block the way of the Lord. By calling the religious hypocrites a brood of vipers, John explicitly identifies them as the offspring of the serpent, and in parentheses, Satan, who is the ultimate accuser of the brethren. So if I remember right, the broader context is he's calling all of these accuser of the brethren and saying that they're sons of their father, the ultimate accuser of the brethren. But then he threw in that serpent language, and that caught my eye. And I was like, is this that same thing?
Have you ever wondered how the Pentecostal movement started, or how the progression of modern Pentecostalism transitioned through the latter rain, charismatic, and other fringe movements into the new apostolic reformation? You can learn this and more on William Branham Historical Research's website, william-branham.org. On the books page of the website, you can find the compiled research of John Collins, Charles Paisley, Stephen Montgomery, John McKinnon, and others, with links to the paper, audio, and digital versions of each book. You can also find resources and documentation on various people and topics related to those movements. If you want to contribute to the cause, you can support the podcast by clicking the contribute button at the top, And as always, be sure to like and subscribe to the audio or video version that you're listening to or watching. On behalf of William Branham Historical Research, we want to thank you for your support. We've talked about this in the Revival History series, but not everybody accepted Branham Serpent Seed Doctrine. It was extremely racist in the 1960s. There were people who, even though he didn't use the word black or white in the language of the sermon that he gave, everybody knew exactly what he was talking about. So it created this weird dividing line where people like Anna Schrader, Jim Jones, others were prophesying that Branham was going to die because he'd gone off into heresy. The interesting part is the black or white issue, the racist issue, was eventually separated from it. And even though he preached it as a bloodline, it was a two-bloodline doctrine, they started to spiritualize this serpent seed concept and say that it was a spiritual thing, not a blood thing, which is the total polar opposite of what he actually said.
Yeah.
I actually went to Branhamite churches that were teaching the spirit version of this. But what that did was very problematic in that it took something that you could take as a black or white statement of fact, truth, or fiction, and you could say that this was this was something that we can't see beneath the hood because it's spiritual, so therefore there must be a grand conspiracy. There must be this thing where all of these different people are coming, rising up against us. And we would use it for things like politics. We get the wrong person in office, and that's Satan and his forces who are taking over Washington, right?
Obama spirit.
Obama spirit. In fact, I think I may have heard the Obama spirit doctrine, actually. Uh-oh. I know that I heard the Clinton spirit doctrine. I know that. but that's exactly what they do. And more to the point, whenever there would be different groups of people rising up who saw the same flaws, the same issues, whenever that happened, we would say this is a grand conspiracy. It's not just one person doing it. Because there are multiple, now we can see that that truly is Satan and they can be ignored. In other words, it's not just one person in the stands who sees that this guy can't throw the ball across the plate. We have three people, so therefore it's a conspiracy against the pitcher. And you simply can't do this, man.
No, it's in the way that they frame it, they say that we're in... It's funny that they do this. The things that people on the outside are doing, they say that they themselves are doing. it's like this double thing, double speak. It says, literal quote, that we are in a season of exposing false ministries, referring to the accusers. They're thinking about the Mike Wingers, the Julie Roys, and all these kind of things. And there's these veiled threats, John, that are like, that make me nervous whenever I read them, because I'm like, I know these people, like this is weird. To where they say that they have information on people and God has told them to expose them, is what he says. And he says that God has given us full permission to tell everything we know. And that seems just very, ooh. And they also, I was trying to find it and I can't, I mean, it's a 138 page document. It's hard to search right now. I was trying to find the direct quote. But they allude to a Bible verse at one point that even talks about like the ultimate fruit of it being death is what it is. And they're implying that people are going to have unfortunate endings because of speaking out against this movement. Directly following that quote, just a little bonus content for you, where they say we are in a season of exposing false ministries. The next line is a new breed of forever apostolic friends is emerging. And so that was another phrase that caught my mind, was the new breed. I was like, oh, that's Latter Rain. And we see like over and over, like the reusing of the old trope of touch not my anointed, which I'm like, at this point, like, don't y'all have any new content? That's level one stuff there. And one that I wanted to hear your thoughts on is there is a underlying thread throughout this whole document of trying to bring back legitimacy to IHOP KC's prophetic history, By name, they mention Bob Jones many times, and try to affirm Bob Jones as a prophet of God. I wonder the connection there, because this church originally started in North Carolina, although they're in Texas now. I think it's like soon as like just a couple years ago, they were in North Carolina, which is where Bob was around there with Morningstar. He even makes a statement in there that pretty much vindicates the Kansas City prophets, is what it is, that their work was true. But he frames up this idea of prophetic blasphemy as like the unpardonable sin, and that people who say that these words are not true, or that they're false, they are committing blasphemy. And it's just another spot where I see fear like used as a tool to keep people in, because like whenever we were deep in that stuff, John, like we would have done everything we could to avoid blasphemy, right? Like, but I imagine that's a repurposed trick as well.
It's funny how these things come out in series, because I don't really plan it this way, but I'll have a conversation with Bob that ties to a conversation with Chino that ties to something I've been researching. And those episodes, I think, come out the week after we're recording this, but come out before so the audience can watch it all in series. But you haven't seen it yet. There are
is this a prophetic spirit here, John?
There is. So there's multiple complex issues here. The first one I'll talk about is the minor prophets, and I'm not referring to the minor prophets of the Bible. There are these voices that have to affirm the prophet, the central figure of a cult. If you don't have those voices, it never sticks. I mean, picture me if I were to come out on a podcast and say, I had a prophecy 5 years ago, and it's coming to pass, and you must do this, that, or the other, you won't go to heaven. Everybody's going to think I'm a nut. But if you were to pretend to be a prophet and verify my prophecy, you say, God told me too, and you start getting that charismatic way about you, people start believing it. Whether it makes sense or not, they'll start believing it. Bob Jones is one of those people. The other thing that, and this is probably the biggest factor of all, Bob and I talk about this quite frequently, I don't think people catch it. There is very much there's a sense of power that comes with having a mythology. So when it talks about the prophetic history, what this is, that is the mythology of IHOPKC. Yeah. You go to the ancient world, and I know people don't understand the concept of mythology as it relates to the religion. Without the mythology, you don't have the religion. In Christianity, I know this is going to offend people, but this is the actual way to describe it. You had the mythology of Jesus Christ. Mm-hmm. That mythology, we believe, if you're a Christian, you believe it is real. So you have the mythology of Jesus Christ makes you Christian. You believe in that mythology. You believe in Christianity. You believe in the mythology of Buddha. You believe in, you're a Buddhist, right?
Right.
So without the mythology, there is no religion. The difference is this. If I'm in a Christian church, and I have a Christian pastor who's not a cult leader. Christian pastor does something horrific. We eject him. We get a new leader. Our mythology hasn't changed. The leader has changed. The minister has changed. Mm-hmm. We still believe the mythology of Christ. We kick the bad leader out. We get a good leader. We still have a functional church. The problem is within a cult, you have a mythology that isn't Christianity, but you claim that it is Christianity. And when you take that away, you don't have a movement. So for them to take away Bob Jones, you're taking away one of the primary voices of prophetic history. You're ripping out the mythology from underneath IHOPKC. When you do that, there is no IHOPKC.
It's funny because just this past week, the Orlando House of Prayer posted on their Facebook page, and I posted on other social media and such as well, that the House of Prayer is not a cult. That they felt the need to post that. Like, I'd never seen one of these affiliated ministries be so brazen using the cult word and denying it. And so it made me wonder, you know, what's in the water.
One of the best ways to advertise that you're a cult is to say that you're not a cult.
Yes, yes. It what's funny, there's this little thread. There's a couple little foreshadowings where, like, whenever you're around this stuff enough, you start to see like where people are trying to get ahead of the ball a little bit, trying to get ahead of the narrative. And there is references to an Antichrist hub in Florida, which caught my eye, especially after the Orlando House of Prayer was claiming that they're not a cult. And then there was another thread of ongoing allegations against Mike Bickle, which I thought was interesting because they are in the camp of none of these allegations are true, yet they have a couple times where they say there are ongoing allegations, as if there's more to come out, which on the beat, I have heard some rumors of things that journalists are tracking down, trying to find out the veracity of some of these things. But it makes me wonder what's in the water, because for them to publish this, for them to do the fast and all the different things that are kind of coming up, we're about to see something happen. But you talk about these minor prophets. There is another thing that he does throughout this is he refers to the end of this document. He says that I have many faithful ministers and friends who are going to like attest to my character and my calling or gifting as a prophet. And he references this list, this appendix at the end of the document, a handful of times throughout the 138 pages. And what you find, my faithful witnesses and references is what he calls it. And the listing of people here, he says, at Father Heart Church, we're blessed to have many prophetic intercessors who are faithful witnesses and character references. And so you can probably guess what he's about to do is he's literally just getting like Yelp reviews from his congregants is the equivalent of what he's doing. And it's funny because the very first one is who I have through research have kind of deduced, I don't know if it's still a currently thing, but at least at one point was his fiance is the first person who gives a testimony. And then the rest of them are all pretty much leaders that he has, and I don't know how this happens, but through his own little ecosystem that he has ordained or commissioned. And the way that he plays it up is that all of these people are people who can objectively speak about his character and his witness. And I don't think that people easily see, and I think that's why like the work that you do is so important, is I don't think that people see the tools of control that are used in these kind of things. And so for these people to say something negative, then they're going to have to give back their minister's license, their ordination, like all these different things that this guy has bestowed upon them. There was even a conflict that you can find traces of in 2021 with Father's Heart Church, where someone publicly accused them of being a cult. And it was the same type of thing that happened, that the lady who was the fiance was the mediator of the whole dispute, and even identified herself as the fiance. And they talked about people whose families had split apart and that they had lost relationships and stuff because this person posted on social media that Father's Heart Church was a cult and that James Crawford was a cult leader. I was trying to find the post. I can't find the post. I want to try to hunt this guy down because they mentioned him by name and ask him about all these things that they're talking about because they're being kind of shady about it. But did have you seen this before? Like as far as the system to where we deputize our own ministers and ordain them and then they become character references? I think if I did that on a job application, people would think I'm crazy.
There are quite a few, but one of the funniest, and when I use the word funniest, I'm talking funny sad because this isn't something that we should laugh at. One of the Branhamite ministers, and I won't give his name, was labeled by social media as the most racist pastor in America. And the funny part is he was branded that because he quoted William Branham during the height of William Branham's Latter Rain revivals. So he is quoting the God's general. He's saying exactly verbatim what the guy said, and he gets branded as the most racist pastor in America. Wasn't his fault entirely, but except for the fact that he believed it. And what he was saying is basically he was talking about interracial marriage and condemning it. All of that kind of language from the 60s. Well, he says it, he gets branded, and you can't really take away the fact that he said it. He said it, and it was there. It's on recording. It was on video, even. You can't take that away. So what you get are a bunch of other people talking about the character of the man that said the very horrific thing. This is a good guy that said this bad thing. What they did, I hate to say it, and I'm laughing because of the absurdity, not because of this is awful. He got a group of ministers to come and try to back him up and says, I'm not a racist. I even bought one of them a bicycle. And it was just so racist the way that he said that.
Yeah,
man.
Yeah.
it was awful. But that's what he did, and that was how it worked. But the ministers were talking about his character, not about the thing that you can't deny. And that really goes back to what I said earlier. When there is something of substance that you can't deny, your brain tries to reconcile it by focusing on something else. It'd be like, this guy robbed a bank. We can't deny that he robbed a bank, but let's go talk to his family. Wasn't he a good boy, Mrs. Smith? And I just saw something like that on the news the other day. This guy did this horrific thing. Well, we talked to his family. He was a good guy. Why did he do this? And then take it a step further. When they get into prison, they're instantly saved. I can't believe I lived this life. God has saved me. Please decrease my sentence. That's how it works, because you're trying to take away. You can't deny the thing that happened. You try to remold and reshape the character of the guy that did the bad thing by claiming that the character should not have allowed the bad thing, and therefore focus on the character, not the bad thing. So it's a red herring kind of tactic.
I realize I didn't finish going through the four signs, and I know that we're getting close to wrapping up, so I wanted to hit on those real quick. So kind of quickly reviewing. So it was the Kansas City Star was the first sign. The second sign was that there was going to be, their good news was going to be told everywhere. The third sign we kind of hit on the last time we talked, which was his dream about Julie Meyer playing a guitar, which Julie has been posting, I think, daily videos of her feasting and what she's been eating on Instagram in support of celebrating survivors and shared stories. And love Julie. She commented on the last video. And so she's been very supportive, but they're coming after her. And the last one was from March, that he kind of took this moment in March where he, quote unquote, and he attaches a video, and I watched the video, and it's weird, but he cast out a demon from a witch that is present in his Zoom meeting church, is what it is. And that sign of him casting out the demon from this witch is confirmation that his prophetic word that followed is true. And so it's, again, it's like one of those logic things of like, okay, what in the world? But the way that he talks about it, and you saying this phrase is what triggered it again, was he said that there is a massive headhunt underway against God's generals. And that's where he talks about the witches and stuff. But he uses that phrase, God's generals, and then begins to talk about Bickle and Joyner and Foyt and all these different people. I saw before we jumped on here today, I saw like 2 or 3 days ago, he posted something trying to defend Chris Reed. Like he's trying to, I don't know what they're, if they're paying him, but they better be paying him good if they are, because he's out here taking shots for all of these guys. But those were the four signs that they went through, that I guess says that Mike Bickle is still God's man. And if you think otherwise, then you're not God's man. But there's also a lot of reframing that happens throughout the document that I'll just hit quickly on, of reframing abuse. That they pretty much say that most of the things that the reason they do it is they want to reframe all the things that Mike's being accused of as just hurting people and not necessarily abusing people. And so he has a whole section where he does that. I saw they had a whole church meeting where they talked about abuse and how abuse is overplayed these days. So there was that whole thing. There is a play on third-party investigations, and he directly says, you know, that the Firefly report doesn't use biblical principles. It doesn't use this Holy Spirit. And he says things like that the only thing that's needed in a church is the pastor, God, and the Holy Spirit, as if they're different things, which is funny to me. But that's how he ends up framing third party investigations. And then he has this moment where he inverts roles, specifically with Julie Royce, that he says that God told him that Julie Royce is the predator who preyed on Mike, and that Mike is not the predator. And so they do this total flip on that. And then I'd hit on earlier about how that they talked about protecting your social circle and your circle of influence and listening to these voices like you and I, John, who talk about it, that they need to block, remove, or mark them. You know, and so that's where they talk about blocking people on social media. See, the direct quote is reject or mark the individual. This may involve blocking them on social media, removing them from group settings, or ending personal associations to guard your peace and spiritual health. And they also use language like boundaries at one point, that you need to establish boundaries to keep your family healthy, which again is one of those half-true things that are used to legitimize themselves. And the final thing that I'll call attention to was that the Newsboys lawsuit was brought up against the Royce report. And the way that he frames it in this is that it's divine vindication, that this lawsuit is proof that God is on our side, because they filed a lawsuit against the Royce report. So therefore, God is for us. Who can be against us?
And the final baseball analogy that I've ran into the ground.
I forgot to tell you, I'm a baseball player, John.
Vindicated. You vindicated me.
Yes, I did.
So what the final part of this, and this is really for me, this is the scary part, because the verbiage that he's using, the witch hunt, etc., what he doesn't realize is he's actually doing the thing that he says that the other people are doing. So in that example, yes, you've got three or four people in the stands who say, hey, that guy, he's not throwing it across the plate. Get him out. Eject this guy. Put in a good pitcher. Well, suddenly the pitcher rises up and says, it's a conspiracy. There's a witch hunt. These guys need to be excommunicated. And then the mob rises up to eject the people who are noticing that, wait a minute, that guy's not a pitcher. The mob starts to form. And yeah, whether he uses the violent language or not, whenever you can form a mob by simply coercing people to rise up against individuals who are witnessing that there's something wrong, you are the person who's creating a witch hunt. There's no two ways about it. You are the person that's doing this. And he's just one of many that are doing it. I've watched, as the news breaks, I've watched the churches that are targeted by the news whenever some victim rises up and says, hey, I was victimized here. You watch what happens within the church. They start to form a mob mentality. We have to eradicate this. And what it is, I mentioned this with Bob, what's really happening is the individuals who are the victims, they challenge the mythology. And so the group, once you're in that mythology mindset, you can't have anything break the mythology. Yeah. If you do, you break the religion. There's no movement. So the person who's challenging your mythology, you have to eradicate them. And the sad part about this is there are examples in history. You can go back. Whenever a speaker does this, when he creates the mob, when he creates the actual witch hunt, there are sometimes individuals who are suffering with mental health issues that may take it a step further than they actually said to do.
Yeah.
And that's really where this whole thing, for me, it gets really scary.
That's exactly what's been on my mind as well, as I was thinking about these splinter groups happening. And from what history has told us is that these cult groups, as they get smaller and smaller, they get more and more intense. Usually they double down on these things. The language starts taking a turn in ways that are kind of scary. And it's so hard because, like you say, many of these people, I think, are innocent in certain ways that they have, their brains have been hijacked by these people. They've been coerced into believing these things, and their whole existence is built around it. And then therefore they act out of that. Like you're saying, it's, they see everything outside as an existential threat. And once you start crossing that line with violent language, it's scary. It's scary because, like, they see us as the ones on the other end of that. Like, that's how they view that. And that's kind of sobering and sad. But Keep an eye on them.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, thanks for bringing this up. It's been a little bit triggering, honestly, to read through this.
Yeah.
Because I read that language and I know exactly what's going on in those heads. And
yeah,
it's really, for me, it's really sad. So thank you so much for doing this.
Yeah.
Well, if you've enjoyed our show and you want more information, you can check us out on the web. You can find us at william-branham.org. For more about the dark side of the New Apostolic Reformation, you can read Weaponized Religion, From Christian Identity to the NAR, available on Amazon, Kindle, and Audible.